Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Affle (India) Limited Q1 FY25 earnings conference call hosted by Anand Rathi. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shobhit Singhal from Anand Rathi. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Neha. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Anand Rathi Institutional Equities, we welcome you all to Q1 FY25 conference call of Affle (India) Limited. I take this opportunity to welcome the management of Affle (India) Limited, represented by Mr. Anuj Khanna Sohum, who is Managing Director and CEO of the company, and Mr. Kapil Bhutani, who is CFO of the company. Before we begin with the discussion, I would like to remind you that some of the statements made in today's conference call may be forward-looking in nature and may involve some risks and uncertainties. Kindly refer to slide 21 of the company's earnings presentation for a detailed disclaimer. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Anuj Khanna Sohum for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, Anuj.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the call today. I trust all of you are keeping in good health. It is a matter of great pride that Affle has completed 5 years as a publicly listed company with remarkable success and wealth creation for all our stakeholders and consistent overachievement on the pre-IPO expectations. Over the last 5 years, we achieved 6x growth in revenues, 5x growth in profits, and 10x growth in our market cap. This performance was a result of our disciplined execution focus on long-term strategic initiatives to consistently enhance our consumer-centric platform offerings, verticalize our capabilities towards high-growth industries, and leverage acquisitive synergies successfully. In Q1 FY2025, we completed the strategic integration of all our acquired businesses. We have achieved a pivotal moment in our integration efforts as one cash-generating unit and a professionally managed business with the top leadership team of 20 CXOs and VPs globally. We have successfully consolidated all our business and platform operations with our hands-on leadership providing direct oversight, thus creating a cohesively managed global business. This has resulted in robust strategic synergies, cross-platform efficiencies that fortify our market position and demonstrate the strength, control, and commitment of Affle's leadership to drive continued long-term growth. Turning our attention to industry trends, one of the notable developments has been Google's recent decision that it will not deprecate third-party cookies. Affle was always immune to deprecation of cookies as our business is focused on in-app and on-device mobile experiences as opposed to browser-based ads. However, Google has clearly indicated that even after 4+ years since it first announced that it will deprecate cookies, there are complexities and challenges associated with its own privacy initiatives. Consequently, Google's Privacy Sandbox project is also delayed. In 2021, Affle transformed the iOS privacy changes to its competitive advantage in both developed and emerging markets. So we are well prepared to navigate any ecosystem-level changes as our expanded IP portfolio of 36 patents includes futuristic GenAI use cases, and the platform is privacy-compliant by design. Speaking of Q1 FY2025 numbers, we continue to exceed our performance targets. This quarter, we have achieved our highest quarterly revenue run rate, highest EBITDA, and consumer conversion till date. We delivered revenue of rupees 5,195 million, a growth of 27.8% year-on-year. We continue to enhance our consumer-centric platform offerings, progressively delivering quarterly EBITDA of rupees 1,047 million and a PAT of rupees 866 million. Our CPCU business delivered about 90.8 million conversions during the quarter. at a CPCU rate of rupees 57. That helped us achieve CPCU revenue of rupees 5,177 million, an increase of 37% year-on-year. This growth is driven by the broad-based adoption of our CPCU model across our customer base and its application to premium use cases, further solidifying our overall value proposition. Our strong anchoring across India and global emerging markets continues to be resilient, and it contributed 73.2% to our quarterly revenues. Our growth for India and emerging markets combined was about 24.8% year-on-year. The market tailwinds remain intact, affirming our positive outlook for continued growth across India and global emerging markets. Our growth in developed markets was about 36.9% year-on-year, and it contributed 26.8% to our quarterly revenues. We are strengthening our foundation through continuous enhancements to our consumer platform tech stack and are confident of sustaining the existing growth momentum. Continuing to share our customer success stories, this time we have included three case studies which are focused on digital-first financial investments in India, direct-to-consumer fashion retail in international markets, and quick commerce as an emerging vertical in India, leveraging our generative AI solutions. As we look ahead to the rest of the financial year 2025, we are poised to further accelerate our growth trajectory with gradual increase in operating profit margins and will continue to deliver greater value to all our shareholders. With that, I now hand over the discussion to our CFO, Kapil Bhutani, to discuss the financials. Thank you, and over to you, Kapil.
Thank you, Anuj. Wishing everyone a good day and hope all of you are keeping safe and well. We have commenced financial year 2025 on a positive trajectory to conclude quarter one revenue at 5195 million, that is 5195 million on a consolidated basis, and delivered a growth of 27.8% year-on-year basis. Sequentially, our revenues have increased by 2.6% quarter-on-quarter basis, further building upon our exceptional growth on quarter four financial year 24 performance. On a standalone basis, India grew by 19% year-on-year, while on adjusted basis, India growth was about 15% year-on-year. And on consolidated basis, our revenue grew by over 20% organically year-on-year. Overall, we had broad-based growth coming across industry verticals and across our markets. During the quarter, India and emerging markets contributed 73.2%, while developed markets contributed 26.8% to our revenues. Our business continues to be in growth momentum, driven by our integrated platform and product strategies, leveraging upon dynamic digital ecosystem. Thus, we achieved highest ever quarterly EBITDA of 1,047 million in this quarter, a growth of 34% year-on-year basis and 5.7% on quarter-on-quarter basis. We achieved EBITDA margin of 20.1%, delivering a strong operating margin expansion. In terms of OPEX, our data inventory cost stood at 61.6% of our revenues from operation in this quarter. While we continue our platform calibration onto premium inventories and touch points and deeper ecosystem partnerships. Our past investments in human resource coupled with integrated team strategies have provided us efficiencies on employee cost for last two quarters, thus normalizing our human resource cost. Our other expenses stood at 7% of our revenues versus 7.8% in quarter four financial year 24. This again is on the back of past investment in sales and marketing cost. Over the last three quarters that have yielded results without further increase in marketing cost in this quarter, thus bringing our other expenses down by rupees 32 million sequentially. We achieved profit before tax of rupees 1,066 million in this quarter, an increase of 52.1% year-on-year basis and 6.4% on quarter-on-quarter basis. Our profit after tax for the quarter was at rupees 866 million, marking an increase of 30.8% year-on-year. Notably, our effective tax rate stood at 18.7% this quarter a significant increase on both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter basis, as we had guided over the past two quarters. Normalizing our PAT for higher tax will demonstrate sustainable, profitable growth, underscoring robustness of our financial health. Moving forward, we see this effective tax rate to be a new standard for us. We continue to prioritize efficient working capital management. As such, there were no material changes in our collection risk. We remain confident of our forward growth trajectory, and as we advance our strategic goals and invest to expand our market presence. With this, I end our presentation. Let's please open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Shobhit Singhal from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, sir. Congrats on good set of numbers. I have two questions. So, sir, first one is top verticals contribution has increased 95% from 90% earlier. So which vertical has led this growth in current quarter?
Hi, thank you for your question. Yes, we are seeing a very broad-based growth overall, but I would say that the growth in the gaming vertical, both in emerging markets and developed markets, has been quite good.
Okay. And sir, second one is, how the growth in US market and emerging market shaping up except India? And if you can just provide growth rate in those emerging market and outlook if you can provide. Thank you.
I think the overall growth has been quite positive for us on a...
Sorry to interrupt you, Anand, sir. Your voice is breaking.
Oh, okay. My connection. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Our overall growth across, on a consolidated basis, organic growth, this quarter has been over 20%, and that is really positive. And we are also seeing, India is growing in a sensible way. We are growing well in India plus emerging markets overall and global markets. In developed markets, because of the pullbacks and the effects that we saw in the previous year and a half period, I think we are seeing now that we are moving in a much stronger way forward. You're seeing perhaps higher growth at this moment. But if you are looking at modeling our company, for a few years ahead, I would think that 20% growth on top line is a sensible way to model our company at this moment, and we will continue to improve our margins, so hopefully deliver better growth on the bottom line.
Thank you, sir. That's all from us.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Raghav Bihani from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I have two questions. One is, the employee expenses have grown just 4% YOY, somewhere in that range. What is your outlook on employee expenses going forward?
Thanks for that question. I think Kapil in his commentary had mentioned that because of the integration and consolidation that we have done globally for our businesses as one single cash generating unit, we have seen significant efficiencies coming in. So yes, I think while the top performing people have obviously got healthy appraisals and bonuses and so on, but we don't need to grow our employee base as much, and there has been some efficiencies. And also, while it may not have come across as clearly, we are adopting the new technologies as a scalable platform really well. Gen AI not only has been adopted in some of our product propositions to our customers, one which has been mentioned in the case studies as well in this earnings presentation. But also within internal operations, we are seeing significant efficiencies coming from that as well. So as business expands, I would expect to keep our employees' expenses largely flattish, at least for the foreseeable future. And you would see much higher growth in revenues and a more flattish, growth in the employee expenses.
Okay, thank you. Another question, since other emerging markets and developed markets are growing faster than India, and Affle is also investing in premium inventory, do you expect acceleration in the CPCU rates from the current 3 to 4% annual growth that we are seeing?
I think it is possible to see some lift over there. But, given that you also pointed out in your question that we're also investing into, premium inventories, I see that effect being utilized from a margin perspective, right? I mean, so I think overall, the way Affle is strategizing itself, we are going more and more premium in the way we are working with, different strategic platforms, be it the app stores or the alternate app stores, the way we are working deeper with our partners with multi-year, plans and product initiatives, you would see a better CPCU premium pricing, and we would be able to, work better in the market to attract the top dollars, hopefully helping us to achieve the higher margin that we intend to deliver, because margin expansion is an important execution focus for us for the next few years.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And congratulations on the good quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Vijit Jain from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Sorry, just following up on my colleague's question a little bit. I was just wondering, there was this news around TCL partnership with MediaSmart towards the end of the last quarter, right? And so I'm just wondering, is that what you were referring to when you talk about, investing in premium inventory, and therefore one should look at that as impacting your inventory costs and data costs, etc., right now with the hope of higher CPCUs down the line?
This is just one example. So the TCL partnership, like TCL, for the benefit of those who don't know, is one of the largest, CTV Android makers in the world. Globally. Maybe in India, they're still coming up, but in other markets, they're clearly a market leader in terms of the Android TV segment. And therefore, these kind of partnerships are important. I'm not suggesting that this is the only one, but there are several partnerships that we are doing and investments that we are making. You would have seen that, we mentioned in the previous earnings calls that we're working with the app stores of OEMs. We are working, very strongly with Apple inventories and pushing, Apple and iOS as a platform across all global emerging markets, including in India, because the share of those devices is going up, and those are premium segments. Like, what does premium mean? Premium here means that we are going for the highest value and highest value wallet share of the consumers. And to go to those consumers, you need to go into high-end devices, you need to go into, CTV, you need to go into, iPhone and iOS ecosystem, even on Android, you need to find those premium touch points where we can get higher value conversions. Now, you get higher value conversions, this is a core differentiation in the market, because then the advertisers and the agencies have no choice but to truly adopt our platform and to pay a premium CPCU rate, which is what we were talking earlier. And in the long term, we think this strategy is one that will provide defensible, sustainable margin expansion and better profitability and competitive moats versus any of our competitors. And I think most of the competitors in emerging markets, at least, are not very strong in the iOS platforms. And given that we have a unique global presence across developed markets and emerging markets, we are leveraging our strength of emerging markets and developed markets and our experience in developed markets on iOS platforms and premium inventories and bringing it to emerging markets. If net effect of it is higher CPCU rate over the long term, higher margin extraction capability, and very importantly, competitive moat. I mean, you know, that's where it becomes defensible and sustainable. So yes, CCS is just one example.
Got it, thanks. And I had one last question. So, you know, you also highlight these, your rankings, specifically with UIP and RevX on these App Flyer Performance Index, right? And I'm just wondering two things. One, do these rankings on a platform like this impact directly your ability to get more advertising dollars from agencies specifically? And the related question to that is this quarter, the non-direct business seems to have gone up in mix, right? So I'm just wondering if there is a correlation between these two things.
No, I would say that when you look at that slide where we talk about our awards or thought leadership and so on, it is definitely an indicator that we are doing well versus competition. But it is still a lot more, let's say, profiling, positioning of the company. The essence of winning business is about delivering performance and conversion. And the advertiser would realize it, you know, so when they run the campaigns with us and they see the results, more business would come. Now, direct versus agency, you know, it's within that range, you know, 70% to 75% direct business. It is all in that range. So please don't read into one quarter or the other. It could very well be that one of the advertisers has, you know, gone from direct to work through an agency because of any corporate policy or otherwise. End of the day, we are serving the end advertiser. Even if we're going through an agency, the agency is just a necessary and important part.
Sorry to interrupt you, Anand. Your voice is breaking. I'll just reconnect your lines in a minute.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for patiently holding. We have the management line back on call. Yes, Anuj.
Hello. Hi. Apologies for this. I have been, you know, as well connected as ever. So I hope you all can hear me well. Not sure what's the reason for the voice quality issue. Can you hear me well?
Yes, sir.
All right. So as I was saying that, you know, the direct and indirect business is an indicator, but fundamentally, all our business is about serving the end advertisers' ads and delivering performance back to them. And so please don't read too much into that or, you know, the PR or the rankings. I think what's important is that we are out there in the market and the advertisers and the agencies are coming to us for business as much as we are going to them. So I think it's about creating the pull factor. While we are selling to them, we're also creating enough marketing and pull that if anybody is doing mobile advertising, CTV advertising, they should want our platform within their budget. So I think we're doing a good job there.
Got it. Thanks. Those were my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Arun Prasad from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Good morning, Anuj and Kapil. My first question, again, continuing on this discussion on this cost management. On gross margin front, we have seen days of, say, where we had around 48, 49, 50% even gross margin. Even till recently before the Jampp acquisition, we had around 41, 42. Is it in our plans anytime in, say, next couple of years, we will be seeing, coming up to that kind of a margin levels, or this is a new normal, especially given that we are focusing on premium. So I assume that premium means eventually you will have better margins as well. So is it something which is in your business plan, Anuj?
So thanks for that question. I think let's understand first when we talk about, you know, the data and inventory costs. We are consistently not just utilizing that to earn our revenue, but we are also investing into the future to make sure that we are listening deeply enough across different verticals and understanding and predictively understanding what is working and what is not working. So as we open new verticals, as we open new markets, as we go deeper, for example, within India, our goal would be to, you know, go deeper beyond, you know, tier 2, tier 3 cities to deeper within, let's say, rural regions as well, and helping our advertisers to drive conversions. Now, India has, you know, 650 million plus connected devices. Not all of those users are necessarily out there shopping and converting, right? But we still make sure that we are creating that wider coverage so that we can keep understanding, investing into the future direction of our market. So what I'm trying to tell you is that when you look at financials and numbers, you see revenue and you see that all the data inventory costs is, you know, going straight because, you know, it's creating that revenue. But there is an element of forward-looking investment in that. Similarly, when we are calibrating our business plan towards premium positioning in the market, we are investing into that aspect so as to raise the profile of our company, deliver higher value to the advertisers, create that validation interdependence so that we have a competitive moat and we can get higher wallet shares and slowly but surely get to higher CPCU levels and better pricing and better margin. So yes, all of that is going on. I wouldn't just cast it as the new normal, but I would say let's let the numbers do the talking a step at a time. You know, the margin profile, which is there right now, I would say it's sustainable. Can we improve it further? Let's see. But I think it has to be seen in the broader lens of what's happening. And we are disciplined and we fully expense out all the data and inventory costs in the reporting period. But there is an element of investment in it.
Anuj, you touched upon this investment part, but it's been always the case, right? I mean, it's not like something new to our business. So is this also possible because your competition is probably lowering the prices and hence probably we'll have to respond to that? Can we infer it as that as well?
I wouldn't say that because competition, we are not fighting the competition on pricing. We are fighting the on value. What do I mean by value? So when we work with the advertiser, let's say somebody delivers a conversion for the same advertiser of a user A and another person delivers a conversion of a user B. Now, if user A has a higher lifetime value, the advertiser would be willing to pay Apple a premium, right? I mean, let's say both the person sitting at the back of the car and the driver of the car, both are using smartphones. Both might convert with the same app to order some food. But let's say the person who's the boss and, you know, pays the driver's salary, that person's conversion is more valuable to the advertiser than, let's say, the driver's, right? So I think what I'm trying to say to you is we are a value ROI-based business model, not a cost-plus business model. We're not necessarily fighting out on pricing. What we are fighting out on is how do we deliver highest lifetime value to an advertiser, deliver premium conversions. So the pricing is not as impacted. Maybe in some advertisers who are not thinking strategically or fully through the funnel, they're saying, hey, somebody's offering this price, go for that. But once they start working with us, we graduate them to see it as a value-based pricing versus a cost-plus. Right. So I don't think that competitive forces are pulling us down, but it is an ecosystem level play. And even for us to look at how can we sustain in the long term, we don't want fluctuation where, okay, in one quarter we are at a, you know, certain level of margin or the other. So I think what you see right now is a sustainable pattern and we will consistently endeavor to, you know, do what is right for our business for the long term. I'm not promising you straight away going, you know, 40% plus, but I'm comfortable with where we are at the moment.
Understood. My second question, Anuj, is on you spoke about Google's policy to in changing the third-party cookies. Do you see the similar action panning out in the GAID or depreciation as well?
Oh, yes, when I mentioned that they have delayed the Privacy Sandbox project, that was precisely what I was talking about. So Privacy Sandbox is the name of the project that is related to, you know, GID and so on. And it is, you know, the holistic thing. Everything is delayed, deferred, or not being done. And I think it's a complex environment from Google's perspective. One, at an ecosystem level. Second, from a regulatory point of view. I think they have many considerations to take care of before they take any action. So at the moment, it seems that, you know, cookies, which I thought was a very simple thing for them to do, technically at least, and over 4.5 years, they have, you know, essentially said that it's not going to happen for now. And so this delay is essentially telling, I mean, first of all, we were not too worried about the cookies at all. No, and we were fully, you know, preparing and ready for privacy sandbox, so there was no nervousness as such about it. But the fact that all of this is delayed or deferred from an investor's perspective or the analyst's perspective, you should know, okay, I mean, right now it's status quo for at least several years forward, and that's good news, right? So this question can be parked aside. But I also want to give confidence to everybody. Please remember, in 2021, what Apple did was way more intense, way more, holistic with the privacy initiatives in 2021 on iOS. And what happened to Apple with that? I mean, we turned it into a competitive advantage in developed markets first and then bringing it to emerging markets as well. So we aren't particularly worried about it.
Right. Anuj, but on this GAID, I just want to understand fundamentally, how important is in today's environment a GAID is very important for you to deliver a campaign, say, as compared to, say, what it was 3 years ago? Is GAID still relevant for you? Or you have technology or you have algorithms which can work beyond GAID as well?
See, what is important is some kind of an identifier. Okay, whether it is our own internal identifier or we're working with the triangulation of several data points to do a predictive identifier, or we're working with the OEMs, you know, to get an identifier. At the moment on Android, GAID is the way it works. And for next many years, it will continue to work like that. But if, let's say, even if Google were to use Privacy Sandbox and say, you know, GAID is gone, there still has to be a way to deliver an ad to a user and to see which device was it delivered to, which user was it delivered to, what happened on it. There has to be an ability to track it. The only thing that is being done right now by all such changes or platforms, the attempt is to protect the consumer's privacy. Let's not have any scenario where the user's privacy is getting compromised. And we are a big supporter of that since inception as a company, right? So I'm not worried about, data privacy. I'm a big supporter of data privacy. And whatever needs to be done should be done, because once the consumer's privacy is intact, there will be more confidence in the ecosystem. As in, it's not that the advertising will suddenly stop. What you need is some kind of an identifier to track that, okay, we've shown the ad and what happened to it, right? And I think that's what the purpose is of an ID or a GID in this case.
Understood. Thanks, Anuj. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swapnil from GM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I had a couple of questions. The first one is on your use case split. So I would like to understand what percentage of your total revenue comes from new downloads, transactions, and O2O. Use cases. If you can just help us understand that, because what I see, your use cases are more focused towards new downloads, which is basically a new customer acquisition. So just wanted to understand from that perspective.
Hi, Swapnil. This is a data point that you're requesting. That is, typically for us, when we go to an advertiser, what we want is a big part of their budget. And each advertiser, based on where they are in the stage of their own journey, will have different levels of split. So, for example, let's say if it is an advertiser in an emerging vertical and it is a new entrant in India, they would be putting a huge amount of money to get new users so that it can drive new conversions, versus an advertiser which has already got, let's say, 20 million, 30 million, or even 100 million users,
they will be spending in a balance and saying, okay, I want new users, but I also want to drive incremental conversions with on my existing base of users, which is what they already have. But they don't want to lose that base for conversion from their existing consumers to a competitor, right? Because each of these industry verticals where we are playing, there are new entrants in those verticals, there are incumbents in those verticals. The existing user, like for us, let's say we already cover, you know, over these years, if you do a tabulation, we've, you know, delivered hundreds and millions of conversions and converted users already. So for our database, that user is not new anymore, right? I mean, chances are that 90% plus of Indian converting users have already delivered at least some level of conversion, some volume of conversions on through the Apple platform to the advertisers. So to an advertiser, which is a new, for them it is a new budget, but for Apple as a platform, we think that we are having almost 100% penetration on the conversion base of the users. And for us, it is not so much as new or existing. We are looking at how can we maximize the conversions from the user, whether it is from a new advertiser or an existing one. So therefore, the slicing and dicing that you're expecting is from our platform vantage point is not that important. However, let me give you an industry insight. A new advertiser, an advertiser which is needing to conquer a lot more of the territory, would typically put 80% of their budget on new user acquisition and only 20% on repeat business from existing users. Whereas an advertiser which has gone to a certain scale and is a, let's say, seen as an incumbent or a market leader could even put 60-70% still on new acquisition in emerging markets and 30-40% on repeat conversions. And then in developed markets, the balance is, more sort of balanced. In developed markets, you'd see more even spends across these initiatives. Yeah. So I wish I could give you the numbers that you are seeking for, but I hope I've given you a better understanding.
That's very useful, Anuja. So just on that point, you mentioned that it may happen that you may have a decent database of the users, and not necessarily because an advertiser is new, that would be adding to some incremental things. So will it be fair to say that since you have such a big database, your gross margins should ideally keep on coming down if the same use case is getting repeated more often?
This is not a fair understanding, because each time you want to drive a conversion, whether it is from a new user for a new advertiser or an existing user for a new advertiser or an existing user for a repeat conversion from an existing advertiser, you still have to work hard in ensuring that, you know, you reach the user at the right place at the right time. So, you know, unless you can show the ad at an appropriate, in the appropriate context. So the context of the user is very important. I mean, if you're busy in your office doing your work, you're not going to suddenly start registering for some entertainment site or some game. But if you have done with, but maybe during lunch break, you'll order food. So, I mean, so it depends on what time, in what context do you show an ad. So there is a lot of effort in still showing ads and creating engagements. But yes, what it does is it creates competitive moat, because our advertisers have worked with us for years and they have seen that a lot of their converted user base has come from us. You know, there is a lot of confidence. They also know that we have intel, first party data that the advertisers have about their own users and conversions. You know, all of that is a relationship of long-term trust, and therefore when they trust such data and insights with our platform, they will continue to work with us longer. And as that happens, if we can convince them to pay a premium, pay higher for the conversion because we can show them a higher lifetime value of those users, or more premium conversions, then we have a way to increase our CPCU price and therefore the margin. So it is a much more involved thing versus saying one segment is more profitable than the other.
Got it. And just one more thing on your India revenue trends. So we have been hearing about RMG gaming impact in the previous quarters. Is it fair to say that the RMG impact is now gone for good, and that has helped? So that basically has helped you deliver a decent recovery on that growth part, which earlier we were slowing.
So I think we are definitely going more broad-based, and even in India, you know, even gaming, definition of gaming, right? I mean, looking at it in a much more broader way than just, let's say, RMG and so on. So I think we are neutralizing that impact. And I would say for now that impact is over, and, you know, this is our new normal, and we will continue to grow sensibly from here.
Okay. And just one data point with respect to your revenue split on developed markets and India and emerging. You have given it for the current quarter. If you can help us with the previous year, 1Q FY24 number, that will be helpful. Thank you.
1Q, 4Q. I think what we are very clear is that India and emerging markets behave in a very similar manner. And, you know, the demographic profile of users, you know, the penetration of connectivity, the adoption of CTV, iPhone, and I mean, all of those elements across emerging markets is extremely similar. So India and emerging markets need to be seen in therefore one block. And, you know, developed markets was also where, you know, some of our performance issues were in the past, which we were very transparent about. So we thought, let's bring it out and let's club it in the logical sense. So I think we did that in the last quarter as well. We're doing it this quarter and onwards as well. But you can connect with our investor relations team, and I think they should be able to provide you what you're seeking.
Sure, Anuj. Thanks a lot for the opportunity, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address the questions from all the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. I repeat, please limit your questions to two per participant. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anmol Garg from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. Anuj, if you can indicate how do you see growth in emerging and developed market in coming years, which is the market where you are more bullish of? And secondly, if you can also indicate what are the margins in both of these markets? And in case the developed market is growing faster, do you see a margin impact for a longer term?
Thanks for that question. I think at the moment we are seeing, you know, a very good momentum across emerging markets and developed markets overall. The kind of verticals and the kind of effort that goes in winning in these markets is slightly different. And, you know, I mean, clearly North America, Europe, these are the two main regions in our developed markets. And we think that in these markets, the addressable market is very, very large, even though the overall pie is not growing as fast, but the size of the pie is so large and we are still so small there, that there is a massive runway for long-term growth to be extracted in these markets for us. Now, the way we address these markets operationally is super efficient. You know, we don't go and say that let's hire hundreds of people to go and dominate in this market. We go incrementally. We focus on some key verticals in those markets, get into the ground position and win. Whereas in emerging markets, you know, I think the battlefield is very different. The kind of competition, the competitive forces we deal with is different. So in developed markets, the pricing is high, competition is high, and therefore margin is balanced. In emerging markets, the competition is low, the pricing is low, and then so you see a very different math. But overall, from a margin and bottom line perspective, I would say, you know, both of these segments are providing us the ability to deliver a similar kind of margin profile in terms of bottom line efficiencies. So, from an EBITDA perspective, right? So if we're looking at 20% plus EBITDA in these markets, in emerging markets, you know, the pricing is low, the cost is low, competition is low, and all of that, we can still extract 20% plus EBITDA. In developed markets, pricing is high, margin, due to competitive forces can get, you know, balanced out a bit, but then you still, you see OpEx, which is, also relatively high. So what we are building our business for is to build a consistent expansion on the EBITDA margin, overall on a consolidated basis, as well as in each of these segment basis. So I wouldn't take one favor or the other. At the moment, developed markets, because of a smaller base, is growing faster. But I would think that modeling our company long-term for next several years at about 20% growth in revenue is a fair way to do it.
Sure, Anuj. And just in a continuation of that, we have decent cash on our balance sheet. So are we looking at any M&A? And if you can indicate, would it be in developed or emerging market?
So first of all, I think we have been extremely successful in our track record of M&As over the last 5 years since we went public. And, you know, barring the challenges that we faced in JAM, which we also negotiated and solved transparently and gracefully, I think we have shown that we are good at this, we know what we're doing, and we are conservative in our approach of doing it. So the cash on the balance sheet is one aspect, but we're also consistently generating more cash every day. Our business is a cash flow positive, operations. And so we will keep adding to the cash pile. So the question is a valid question. How will we invest that cash to unlock more shareholders' value? And M&A is one of the ways of doing it. But I think we are not in a rush. We have just completed UAP is 1 year, and full integration done in less than a year. So I think we're not in a rush, but let us wait and see. If we find the right acquisition target, we certainly would. But we must also keep ourselves ready to see how the ecosystem evolves around new innovations, which we are already building in-house as well. But we also keep an eye out for what's happening in the market. If we see something interesting that would add value disproportionately and, put a booster shot into our growth, I think we will certainly take that step for the acquisition. I wouldn't give you any clear indicator yet whether there's a preference of doing it in India or emerging markets or developed markets. I think let's keep an open mind. And when we find the right target, we will provide the right discourse.
Thanks. And just the last one from my end.
Sir, I request you to come back for a follow-up question.
Sure, I'll come back.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak from Sundaram Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Thanks. So, sir, this quarter we have shown an good growth of 28%, and partly it is because of a favorable base in last Q1, where our UAP revenue was around 45 crore. Now, on the quarterly run rate, it is around 89 crore. So that's why we're able to show that 28% growth rate. Now, going forward, like 9 months into FY25 or H2 into FY25, do we expect that to maintain 20%+ growth on YY basis? Because in last quarter, you had mentioned that, we have recovered some lost ground in Q4 FY24, and the cyclicality of revenue from Q3 to Q4 in FY25 could be expected.
See, I don't give short-term guidances, and I think the numbers speak for themselves. If you look at the numbers of this quarter, year-on-year growth, we've already provided that it's over 20% organically. So even if you remove the effect of UAP's 1 month, you still see organic growth of 20%. And if you look at last year's Q2 numbers and you apply our current Q1 numbers, assuming this coming quarter, July, August, September, I mean, I'm not giving you any guidance, but let's say we do exactly the same numbers and there's no sequential sort of uptake, which is not how we are. I mean, we typically see Q1 to Q2, there is some sequential uptake, but let's say there isn't any and, we keep it flattish. Even then, compared to last year's Q2, we already more than 20% growth, and that's fully organic because it's like-to-like comparison. So you can already see that 20% revenue growth is the numbers already telling that, and I'm also telling that not on a short-term basis, but on a long-term growth outlook basis, it is a sustainable, defensible growth position to have. So if we do any other organic transaction, any M&A, then the number would hopefully be even more, but 20% is defensible. And even if you take last 5 years' growth trend, I started my commentary by saying in the 5 years roughly, over or almost six times growth in revenue has happened. And if you map it up, and you'll find that that's almost 50% CAGR growth. But that's organic plus inorganic. But if you just want to model it on, let's say, no acquisitions, nothing else, 20% is a defensible, you know, long-term position for modeling our growth.
Okay. Thank you for the clarity. So my second question is with respect to your inventory cost. So, sir, now our, all the platforms have been integrated, right? So now we can use each platform's ability to target our existing clients or newer channels. For example, UIP and Jampp used to target in in-app mobile. Now, because of this integration, maybe we want to target those on CTV as well, new channels. Okay, and those will be kind of a relatively newer venture for us, for those client and those sector. So right now our inventory cost as percentage of sale is around 61.6%. So because we are venturing into this premium inventory and newer channel, do we expect this cost to go up or to be maintained at the current level?
See, first of all, that's a very good insight that you gave, and you connected it to, you know, CTV, that, you know, if you see our reports or news, we are talking about Jampp CTV, you know, UAP CTV. We are talking about, you know, different dimensions of expanding the reach of our integrated propositions across connected devices to the consumer. See, end of the day, the consumer is the same. So if you as an individual go and transact with an advertiser, do you think it makes a difference to the advertiser whether you came from in-app mobile, on-device mobile, or from CTV? You as a consumer are of the same value to that advertiser, correct? And if you see how Apple has consistently defined its business, we call ourselves as a consumer platform business. Why? I've never said we are an ad tech company or an ad tech platform. I've always made the distinction to say Apple is a consumer platform business. We are focused on consumer-centric innovations. And when we focus on the consumer centricity, it means that we will go to all connected devices that the consumer is going to connect with. So since mobile is the center forward device at the moment for the consumer, CTV is another device. As we go forward, there will be variables, there will be new form factors. As long as Apple's innovation focus is on the consumer, we cannot go wrong. Similarly, for the advertiser, we are saying, look at the consumer. It's the same consumer on mobile, it's the same consumer on CTV. As long as we focus on the consumer, we will find the right conversion. And it doesn't matter whether the conversion comes from, you know, a CTV connect, or it comes from a mobile connect and so on, right? So I think our focus is on the consumer. And as long as we do that, we will need to be on all connected devices. As far as the data and inventory cost is concerned, I think I've already answered in a previous question, and we are where we are, and we are comfortable to, you know, defend that range and position at the moment.
Okay. So then, sir, our monetization factor won't be affected because of these different channels?
I think the monetization factor should become more favorable as long as with the right choice of channels, if we can go more premium and command better pricing. So when we say premium channels, it means we are going after premium users. We are going after those users in each country who are actually going to transact a lot more than the other users. So in India, let's say there are 150 million transacting users, you know, who are actually, you know, ready to pay or engage with an advertiser. Not all of those 150 million are the same, right? The ones who are on iOS devices or the more premium Android devices or the ones who have CTVs at home, wouldn't you agree that those are the users who are perhaps more premium? And if they are, then we should be able to charge a better pricing, hopefully get better margins as we go along. So I think our focus is to make sure that we are covering the whole spectrum of the user base and bringing our advertisers' objectives, you know, to the forefront. But, you know, we are covering the whole base. On one side, we're going more premium. On the other hand, we're also making sure we're deepening our reach, even into rural India and so on. Because the advertisers' objectives might be different. On one side, it is give us higher premium users, give us higher ROI. On the other hand, could be give us deeper reach because we want to cover more ground. So, you know, I think we are balancing that out in a sensible way.
Thank you so much for answering the question, sir. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Rahul, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question.
Am I audible now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I know this in a different way, making an attempt. So if you could share, you know, what are the top 3 or 5 markets for us at this point and what are the respective ways? Or if you could share, you know, what is the industry growth rate for us on a weighted basis based upon the markets that we are working at this point?
Thanks. Well, I would say in terms of, you know, markets, the broad regions that we are focused on include, you know, Asia-Pacific or Asia as a region. You know, we are it's Latin America, Africa. I mean, these are the emerging market regions. And from a developed markets perspective, it's clearly the North America and Europe as the developed markets. And I think the growth rates across these regions is different. So for the emerging markets, you know, one could say that the growth rate is higher than the developed markets, but then the addressable market in the developed markets is bigger and we are smaller. So I think the theory around, you know, growth rates of an industry at is applicable once you reach a certain, you know, size and scale. So for in emerging markets, I would say the industry growth rate becomes important to us because we are a meaningfully sized player in emerging markets. But in developed markets, we are so small that, you know, the industry growth metric should not be a dampener for us because the addressable market is so big. I wouldn't want to give you any specific numbers. If you look at industry growth across markets, you'll be able to pick it up from some, you know, market research reports that, you know, that you prefer or want to rely upon, or you can connect with our IR team and see, you know, what they want to share, but I would rather quote it from a source than just throw some numbers on the call.
Sure. Or maybe another thing that would help address, since you said that in emerging markets, we are relatively better placed in terms of our size. So India, I can understand if you could sense that what would be our kind of a market share or positioning in some of the 2-3 relevant bigger markets within the emerging bucket, and also what are the typical trends between performance and branding? If you could give any color in that.
Sure, I'll provide just some color. So, you know, typically when we look at advertising, you slice the pie, say what is the total advertising spend in a market, then you look at what is the digital spend. Within that digital spend, how much is going to the walled gardens like the Googles, Facebooks, and so on. And then from there you say, okay, in the non-Google, Facebook part of the pie, you know, who are the market leaders? And you would find that within that space, Apple is clearly positioned as one of the key market leaders, or, you know, the company that should be in the consideration set. So our goal from a market positioning perspective is that all advertisers are necessarily spending on digital, and they're increasing their spends on digital. And within digital, they are also increasing their spends on non-walled garden, non-Facebook, Google digital. Within that space, if anybody is spending money, they should definitely look for Apple, or our sales team should have already knocked on their door, or they should already be our existing customer, right? So this is the way we map the landscape and we go into these markets. And I would say that, you know, we have a very good position and market position. You know, tabulating market shares specifically is challenging. But I would say that in terms of perception, our competitors, their employees, our customers, their employees, our agencies, ecosystem partners, OEM operators, all of them see Apple as a market leader in the Google, Facebook space of digital advertising, and also see us as a market leader who they can trust, and they can share their first-party data with and do long-term, you know, 4 years, 5 years kind of integrated projects or initiatives with. So we are seen as a very, very important stakeholder in our ecosystem across emerging markets, certainly. And in developed markets also, I think we are, you know, creating a name and space for ourselves very well.
Thank you, Rahul, for your question. The next question is from the line of Lokesh Manik from Valam Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Anuj and Kapil. I just have two questions. One is, Anuj, just to get some insight from your understanding of the global industry, the advertising budget of an advertiser is, you know, divided between brand awareness and performance marketing. So what would be this ratio globally, if you would have some idea on that? And the follow-up on that is, how do you see CPCU as a proposition, you know, what is the market share versus CPM, let's say 5 years back, and how it has improved? How are you seeing it improve in the global markets? That was the first question.
Thanks. Oh dear, I'm hearing a lot of feedback. Okay, this is better now. So in terms of the lines, you know, between brand and performance in digital, are actually getting more and more blurred. And I mean, the way we see it is that even though we go to agencies and we go to the brands and we work with them, our pitch to them is still that, you know, it's not that you've just done the advertising just to show or to create an impression or an impact on the minds of the consumers, but you can actually drive conversion, because in digital is very action. It's not a passive, just see it and done, right? I mean, in digital, most of us want to engage with something that we have built genuine interest in. And whether it's a click or whether you go beyond or you save it for later or you, you know, want to share it with some friends or make it more viral, there has to be some actionability associated with digital. And that's why digital is such a personal and interactive medium. And therefore, the advertising spends, I mean, traditional media is very easy to see what is brand and performance. If you're asking me from an overall ad spend, how much is going to traditional media brand and how much is going to digital, I think those are several reports in the market. But within digital, is there really such a big line between brand and performance? Not to us. So when we work with brands, we convince them that you should still do branding on a conversion measurable basis, whether it is a conversion or engagement that happens online, or whether it's a conversion which leads to a footfall where somebody walks into your retail store or engages with your brand offline. I mean, they should, because they still carry the mobile phone with them. And if we could create that level of conversion metrics for, let's say, budget that was marked for branding. Now, this is what Apple's endeavor is, and that's a very good space to be in, because brands like to see accountability as well. Nobody is saying, okay, no, I'm putting branding money, so take it, you know, chill, no problem. Just show us how many people saw it. You know, everybody wants to know, you know, truly what was the impact and, you know, what kind of conversion ROI impact it would have. So it is possible to measure it on CPCU basis, and that's what we are educating the market for. And so far we are seeing, you know, pretty positive response, even from agencies, traditional agencies, you know, brand advertisers, and, you know, we are finding good audience with them and, you know, converting them slowly but surely.
Great. Anuj, my second question was on if we have to gauge the intelligence of your tech stack and how it is improving year on year. Apart from conversions and, you know, the connected devices that you're adding, any other variable you would like to call out that we can track and, you know, gain more insights and confidence into how the tech stack is getting more intelligent data?
See, I think the intelligence of the tech stack is something that we are constantly calibrating, you know, multiple times in a day, right? When any campaign that is continuing, we're always trying to see how can we make it more efficient. And if we can make it more efficient, then we allow ourselves room for doing more strategic investments, you know, either trying to experiment more, let's take it more premium, let's take it further. Or, so there are two options, right? I mean, let's say if our campaign intelligence become better, that means we should be able to drive conversions at a lesser cost. Now, we can therefore pass that benefit back to the advertiser so they see higher ROI, right? Or what we can do is we can cast the net wider and look for, invest into the future to find new pockets of high-value users or deeper strategic reach in those markets. So I think the measurability of our intelligence is seen in many, many ways. For example, one could slice and dice the intelligence of our platform to say, how are video ads doing on our platform? You know, are we becoming more intelligent in the combination? How are we doing on CTV? You know, are we driving more conversions there? What kind of a combination of connected devices within households are we doing? So if we show an ad on a mobile and then another one on CTV. So we are doing so many slice dice combinations, and that's what our data science teams, you know, and the AI, when we talk about AI, that is what we're doing. And interestingly, even to assess our own performance, we're using Gen AI. So we're using Gen AI to assess the performance of AI on a real-time basis to see which algorithms and which context is doing better. And the slicing and dicing has become very, very efficient. Per campaign, per market, per inventory type, the granularity of our intellectual platforms, intellect and performance is very, very high. And, you know, I mean, we don't want to open all of this to our competitors' advantage. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Thank you, Lakush, for your question. Ladies and gentlemen, due to paucity of time, this was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Well, thank you so much for the support to Apple. Like I mentioned at the beginning of my commentary, we take immense pride as an organization that, you know, we have been able to deliver value over the last 5 years as a public company, and with over 3 lakh shareholders in India, some really strong institutional investors, including, you know, the recent addition of the Singapore government investing in our company. It is a matter of great pride to us that Apple has had a great 5 year journey as a public company, and we hope to provide consistent performance over the next decade and beyond. So we're looking forward to more opportunities, and we stay tuned and please stay interested, and we will provide you clarity in, as we get more opportunities on the next earning calls and beyond. Thanks.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.